Well, good morning. We are starting on the book of Genesis today. The book of Genesis. And as promised, and I'll just tell you a couple of things. Most of you have heard this already. Of course, I taught through Genesis in Chad here recently with the Pastoral Enrichment Program. However, PEP has asked if I would consider rewriting their notes on Genesis. And so what you're going to get is kind of a first draft towards that. So I would welcome a constructive feedback, the key word being constructive there, all right? So on this, not so much necessarily in class. I mean, we'll have time for questions and things like that. But along the way, if there are things that you go, hey, this was not clear or could be more helpful, if this was explained, that would be just fine to me. Or if you say, boy, you're really missing this as you think about trying to introduce people to the book of Genesis, that will be just fine. Now, this is both true for here and also what will be produced for a pastoral enrichment program. This course, is just as we're kind of introducing it here, is not designed to be a course where you're taught every passage in Genesis. Now, we could do that, but anybody know how many chapters are in the book of Genesis? 50. So if we took a chapter a week, we're in Genesis for a year, okay? Even if we took two chapters a week, which in some cases is very doable because they're long narratives, we're still talking half of a year, and that's without any introduction whatsoever, any framework for how to understand the book, okay? So both when I taught this in Chad and when we teach it in here, it's not actually possible, really in a constructive way, to teach through every verse in the entirety of the book. Even if we took a chapter a week, that's just not going to happen well. What we're going to try to do is to give some tools that are necessary for someone if they want to be a good interpreter of Genesis. In other words, my hope for you is that you will be equipped to read the book of Genesis well. So, if you're 20 years old and God gives you another 60 years of life and you read through the Bible, maybe once every couple of years, once every year, whatever your pattern would be, is that you would have the tools to know how to read Genesis effectively. Now, in addition to that, I think that if you understand how to read Genesis well, there are also tools that will help you to read the rest of the Pentateuch well. That's Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And in addition, I think it will help you as you just read what we call narrative well, which we'll talk about here this morning. Okay? So hopefully, if we get time to it, we'll see. So the job is to put things together in such a way that you can do this. So we might think of this as like, you know, you get one of those pieces of furniture that you have to put together on your own, and you're given instruction manual, a manual how to do that. Hopefully this will be a good instruction manual and not one who's written by somebody who doesn't speak English. You've had those before, right? Okay, and you're like, who put this together? Hopefully it'd be one of those clear ones, and you get those now and then. You know, normally when I open something like it's a new grill or a piece of furniture or whatever thing that you got to put together, I just assume it will be terrible, right? That it's just going to be very confusing. In fact, I put together a hunting stand or a tree stand here before hunting season, and it's one of those metal contraptions you put together. The instructions were terrible. I had to take apart things three times because the pictures were so off to where the bolts would go. Hopefully it's not going to be like that, because now and then you do get one of those where it's like, this is so clear, it's so helpful, and we could put it together easily. So this is kind of like that, how to help you put together the whole of the book of Genesis in the long run. God willing, we'll have a rather lengthy introduction. It's going to span several weeks to the book of Genesis. And then we're going to go through some key sections and passages in the book of Genesis, dealing with some particularly important themes in the book. And then in the long run, I hope to produce kind of like, it'll essentially be something similar to what's in a good study Bible, some key notes to what is in the book of Genesis, what you need to know to interpret it. Like, there's just certain things that if you don't know the cultural background of something, you're going to have a hard time understanding what's happening in the text. Most of you, that will probably not be that necessary. We're not going to run all the way through it. I'll see if I get it done by the time we're done with this course. And the reason for that is most of you have really good study Bibles, but the kind of places where this is going to be taught overseas, they may or may not have that. So we're going to try to provide them some things that they can have in their hand for key cultural background issues to help them understand points in the book. And then the long-term goal is actually, in the case that this is going to be taught to pastors, is to have about three or four sermons that are going to demonstrate how you preach or how you teach through Genesis. Those I'm not going to preach or teach through here, but hopefully, eventually, even if I don't have them done before this course is actually finished, I'll give them to you so that you can have the whole set of notes. So that's kind of the plan. On my end, I have a tentative goal to have this done in 18 months from starting January, so a year and a half, 2026. Like, that's ready for the printers. But what you're going to get, the key part of it, will be done in the next few months, and then I'll edit it and rethink it. So that's kind of the plan. So thank you, whether you're willing or not, for being my guinea pigs. And most guinea pigs aren't. Most of them don't sign up. You know, they just get the shot, whatever they put in. You know, it's like, yeah, you survive, you don't. We'll find out how this goes, all right? Now, in general, we want to understand the book of Genesis as a whole. And this is actually a key question as we think about how to interpret Genesis, as we would think about how to interpret any book of the Bible. The key question we really want to ask and answer is, what is Moses trying to accomplish in this book? What is he trying to accomplish in this book? And if we can answer that, we'll have interpretive keys to help us as we move our way through Genesis, and will also help us as we think about how it applies to our context in our lives today. So there's just some general introductory comments about our time together. So let's jump into our notes here. And let's first talk about the importance of Genesis. The importance of Genesis. The book of Genesis is fundamental in several respects. Number one there, it is the first book of the Bible on which all others are built. All others are built. Now, we should note, and I have this in your notes as well, likely the book of Job was probably written before Genesis. Okay, that's probably the case. We do not have, for instance, in the book of Job, we have no reference to the people of Israel. There's no reference to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. There's no reference to a fully developed sacrificial system, though there are sacrifices that are mentioned. But of course, there's sacrifices before the people of Israel as well. We see that in chapter 3 and 4 of Genesis. So Job was probably written before Genesis, likely at the dawn of people being able to write as we would think about it today. However, as the Jewish people arranged the canon of Scripture, and also Christians did the same, it's the book that is listed first. The rest of the Bible does not make much sense without the book of Genesis. And that's what we mean by it's the first book of the Bible on which all others are built. It's not necessarily the first chronologically, but just practically, understanding the Bible, we don't get the Bible well without Genesis. It just doesn't make sense. So for that reason alone, it's worth studying. Chronologically, Genesis tells us the beginning of all things. There's our next blanks there, the beginning of all things. And this includes, you know, when we say all things, it's everything. It's the universe, who we are as people, where sin came from, where mortality, where death comes from. It tells us about the origin of family. We could also add in there marriage. Ethnicities, where do the peoples of the earth come from, where languages come from, tribes of Israel, how the people came to be in Egypt And as we are going to see even this morning, as I'm going to be preaching from Genesis 3:15, we're going to see the beginning of God's plan of redemption. And there are other things that we could add in there as well. So the Genesis tells us the beginning of all things. And by the way, that also makes it really, really important, because the kinds of things that we just list here, and this is, we could add more to it, underlie some of the most important questions that people ask. Right? Where did we come from? Why is the world the way it is? Why is there evil in the world? Why is there death in the world? Why sin? You know, where did language come from? How did the peoples of the earth become so spread out and diverse? I mean, people ask those questions, and they fund all sorts of research grants for people who don't believe the Bible to try to answer those questions, and they come up with sometimes some rather bizarre theories as to that. But Genesis asks and answers these questions. Did I run out of handouts?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good problem to have. So 40 was not enough. All right. So these are important things chronologically. Just it tells us where things came from. And then theologically, essentially all the biblical doctrines find their source in this book. There's your blank. Find the source in this book. You want to know about God? That's what we mean by theology proper. In the beginning, God. God is just dripping all over Genesis. In fact, specifically, God's sovereignty and his providence is everywhere in this book. All over. Even you want to know about Christ. We see Christ specifically prophesied about. Genesis 3:15, also Genesis 50. When it talks about a scepter shall come out, or the lion, excuse me, of Judah. Scepter shall not depart from the house of Judah, the line of Judah. And along the way, there's also other inclinations towards Christ. And of course, even if someone wants to argue, well, those are not clear prophecies about Christ specifically, Christ doesn't make sense without Genesis. There's no reason to have a Jesus come if Genesis doesn't exist. And in fact, that's the way Matthew took it. Remember how Matthew starts his gospel? He starts by going through the genealogies that trace Genesis through. Okay, so when we think about Christ and the Christology, it comes from Genesis. Even there's, I think, some inclinations towards the doctrine of the Holy Spirit. That's what we mean by pneumatology there. Pneumatology. Pneumas is the Greek word for spirit or wind or breath. The Spirit of God. Anthropology, doctrine of man, and so on. Doctrine of sin is harmartiology, salvation, angels, and eschatology is the last things. All of these, they find their source. Now, that does not mean that Genesis actually gives us the complete picture of all those things. But the rest of the Bible and what we know about these things doesn't really make sense without Genesis. And thus we can say, letter A, that the message of the Bible can only be understood if you have studied Genesis. And even more, the message of the gospel can only be understood if you have studied and understood Genesis. Now, this, by the way, is really important these days, even on a really practical level. When people share the gospel message today, we need to understand that most of the people we talk to know either next to nothing or literally nothing about Genesis. All right, they might have a cartoonish image in their mind about Noah's Ark, and it literally will be cartoonish. Or they might have in their mind a picture of half-naked people with fig leaves guarding the important parts about Adam and Eve. And I'm not trying to be crude, but that's just the facts. That's the extent of what most people know about Genesis. And yet, you can't make sense of not only the Bible, but even our preaching of the gospel without a basic understanding of man's condition and what God has planned to do about it. And that starts in Genesis. That's not even to mention about all the foundational aspects of a Christian worldview that come out of Genesis. So it's a really, really important book. And practically what that means is that if we want to be effective communicators of the saving message of Jesus, this is one of those books that we really just have to have fixed in our minds so that we have the categories to understand why Jesus was even important or is important for people's lives. Often what happens today is, I mean, you'll hear people preach the gospel and they have no reference really to sin and the actual full extent of man's fallen condition to teach people. And it's just like, well, we've got this guy, Jesus, he loves you, believe in him. And that's really not enough. That's not the way the New Testament authors presented the gospel, nor is it the way the gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, presented the gospel as well. So you have to have a foundation, at least a basic understanding of Genesis. So it's important for us as Christians as we think about how to communicate both the Christian message and also how to communicate the gospel itself. So Genesis, an important book. We could say lots more things about why it's important, but I hope at least that whets your appetite to think about that practically for us. All right, let's talk about the title of the book. Did you know that the title Genesis is not what Moses slapped on the book? Where did it come from? Well, the title of Genesis comes from the Septuagint version, which says in Genesis 2:4, and the Septuagint is the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible that was made before the time of Jesus, shortly before the time of Jesus. The title of Genesis comes from the Septuagint version, which says in Genesis 2:4, Autu a biblos genasu uranau kai gas. And I'm not actually a great Greek pronouncer. That's probably pretty close. But literally what that means is this is the book of the origin of the heaven and the earth. That actually comes from the Net Septuagint translation. You can find that online for free if you ever want to read in English, a pretty good translation of the Septuagint into English. That's where it's at. In there, you see that word Genesu, all right, that is the origin or the beginning. Thus, the title became on the Septuagint, Genesis Cosmu, the origin of the cosmos. That's what they put on the title. So that was shortly before the time of Christ. It was the first book of the Pentateuch. That's the first five books of the Bible. His title was followed in the Latin Vulgate, that was an early translation done by Christians of the whole Bible into Latin, and it was Liber Genesis, Liber Book, Book of Genesis. And it's kind of stuck as a title, been shortened to Genesis to today. But if you were to have read original copies, it did not say Genesis as a title. In fact, it's unlikely it even had a title. They didn't really do that like we would think about when Moses wrote. The word Genesis means lineage or origins. Therefore, this is a very appropriate title because, of course, the book tells us, as we have already noted, about the origin of a number of things. Creation of the universe, mankind, sin, human culture, people of Israel, and so on. Martin Luther preferred to call it the first book of Moses. And so if you were to read the German and Hungarian versions, that's the title of it, the first book of Moses. Jews often use the title Bereshith, which is from the first word of the text in Hebrew, in the beginning. That's what it means. Okay, so the title is not inspired or original, but it's a good one. By the way, many of our New Testament and Old Testament books don't have a title. They've been assigned by Christians or Jews over the years. For instance, the Gospel of John, you will search in vain in the text itself to find John as being the title of the book. In fact, for a long time, there was even debate whether it was John the Apostle who wrote the book. Christians came to very good reasons, conclusions that it is John who wrote it. So that's not unusual. It's helpful for us, though, to divide up the Bible to say, turn to Genesis, not to, turn somewhere in the beginning of your Bible, right? You put a title on it, helps us as we put the books together. Now let's talk about the theme and the objectives of the book. And we're going to spend a while on this. We probably will not get to even what all we have in your notes here today on this. And we'll spend several weeks talking about the theme and objectives in various ways. The title, The Beginning, describes well the general theme of the book. However, to discover the theme more accurately, we need to, number one, observe the content of the book, and number two, situate it in its historical context. So let's talk about the content of the book. You can divide the book into two major sections. This isn't the only way to divide the book, but it clearly there's some sort of structure here. In chapters 1 through 11, there are four major events. You all who are really sharp in the Genesis, you probably can fill these out. What's the first one? Creation. There you go. All right. What's the second one? Yeah, I'm going to use the term fall, but corruption is a good one. The fall. The third one. It's got to be the flood. All right. The flood. And number four, the fourth major event, is Tower of Babel. So four major events in chapters 1 through 11. Creation, here's your first column, fall, flood, the Tower of Babel. Now, in chapters 12 through 50, there are four major characters. They are, who's our first one? Abraham. He, by the way, dominates more than anybody else in the book of Genesis. Chapters 12 all the way through, basically chapter 25, is essentially about Abraham. Then we have after him, this would be pretty good like Sunday school stuff. What do we got? Isaac. He's our second major character. He is major, but in some sense incidental. He's important to the story. Actually, not a lot is said about Isaac. In general, we have that key thing where, you know, he's potentially going to be offered on Mount Moriah. Other than that, he doesn't say a lot, do a lot. What he does say isn't particularly helpful, which we might talk about here this morning. Isaac. Then after him, we have Jacob. Much more is said about the grandson of Isaac than it is about his son. Or excuse me, the grandson of Abraham. Get that right. Son of Isaac. Than it is about Isaac himself. And then finally, our fourth major character, Joseph. I think it's chapter 37. Basically, the last 12, 14 chapters, somewhere in there of the book, is dedicated to the story of Joseph. Doesn't perfectly lay out that way, but there's four major events and four major characters. Now, this is important to understand here, as I have in your notes. From the point of the view of the organization of the book, we notice that there are only 11 chapters to cover more than 2,000 years of history between Adam and Abraham. Okay, only 11 chapters. While there are 38 for the roughly, we're just using round numbers here, 300 years between Abraham and Joseph. Now, this shows us that God is particularly interested in giving Israel a historical summary of its origins as well as its place in the world. Now, in this sense, the first 11 chapters can be considered the prologue of the book. P-R-O-L-O-G-U-E, prologue of the book. Now, when we say prologue, hear this very, very carefully. We are not saying that the prologue is unimportant. That should not be written that way. We should note that the prologue is not unimportant. No, that's right. I said it right. Okay. I'm looking for mistakes already in my own stuff. All right. It sets the context of where Israel came from. It's also important as we think about in the progress of Revelation, it sets not only the context of where Israel came from, but from where we came from and what God is intending to do in the long run. It is very important, but it is in some way a setup for the rest of not only Genesis, but also the Pentateuch as a whole, the first five books of the Bible. Now let's talk just a little bit about the historical context of the book. Genesis was written by Moses at the time when Israel was emerging from 400 years of servitude in Egypt. They would be fully formed in the Promised Land as a distinct nation with its own institutions and beliefs. The purpose of Genesis can be formulated this way. The book seeks to recount how Israel was selected from among the nations of the world to become God's chosen people. Okay? That, I think, is a pretty good statement, and I'm borrowing from several authors putting some of their definitions together of why Genesis exists. The book seeks to recount how Israel was selected from among the nations of the world to become God's chosen people. Part of that account, letter B, here's some blanks for you, is learning where they came from. There's a history that's given from Adam to Noah, from Noah to Abraham, Abraham to Jacob, Jacob and his sons, to how they came to be in Egypt. Yes, Isaac is in there too, but he's really largely an incidental figure in the book. So we need to set in our mind, when you read Genesis, the first thing we do, we always read the book of the Bible. We try to read it as close as we can to how the original readers would have read it. And so here are the people of Israel. They've left Egypt. Likely, we'll talk about this a little bit later, likely they have left Egypt, and probably by the time they receive Genesis, they're either somewhere in the middle of their wilderness wanderings or at the end of their wilderness wanderings, probably at the end. Moses likely wrote the Pentateuch, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. He likely wrote them while they were on their way through the wilderness wanderings and finished it up before he died. And then went into the children of Israel went to the Promised Land. And so they've left Egypt. They are probably at the end of the 40 years of wilderness wanderings. And they've got important questions that they need answered. Genesis answers key important questions for them, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. Maybe we'll get to it yet even today. So that's the context. Originally, post-Egypt, before they've entered the Promised Land. Okay, you should hold that in your mind when you read Genesis, if you want to just read it as the original readers did. It will help you to understand why Moses might have written what he did under the inspiration of God. Now, letter A, number four, letter A. Now let's interpret Genesis as narrative in its historical context. So let me just give some broad statements about narrative. When speaking about narratives in the Bible, we speak about stories. This next sentence is very, very important. It's very confusing today. Stories are not always fiction. Okay? I can tell you a story of why my beard is a little bit longer than it should be this morning. Because my razor was left at my mother-in-law's house yesterday when we left, so I don't have the trimmer to trim it properly. I have another way to do it, but it was going to take too long because I had my alarm set for 5:45 this morning, and my phone did a software update overnight, and it did not go off. So my wife came in at 7:30 and said, "Do you know that it's 7:30?"
Excuses.
That's a true story, okay? But it's a story. And actually, even the way that I've just set it up helps you understand the way that narratives are set up. Narratives, number one, are arranged for a purpose. You can have a true story that you arrange to communicate something. Now, even what I just recounted to you, I did not just recount a list of brute facts. I set up that story to communicate some ideas. In this case, some ideas about stories themselves. And by the way, I didn't put a lot of thought in that. I just came up with that on the fly here, right? I was just thinking about recent story. What could I tell? Oh, yeah, here, that's easy. Okay. You set up a story to communicate something. Thoughtful narratives are designed and arranged to communicate ideas and values. So, thoughtful narratives or thoughtful stories. Are there such things as not very thoughtful narratives and not very thoughtful stories? Yes, they exist. If you go to Walmart into their books section, there are tons of them that are just the most thought that they've put into that is they just want to entertain, okay? Sometimes salaciously, right? those are not really thoughtful other than, you know, maybe some baseline entertainment value. But then there are narratives, stories that are constructed in such a way to communicate something that's very deep, very important. We certainly know that in the case of like a good biography. A good biography is kind of written like a story. It's taking the arrangement or taking the materials of someone's life or a series of people's lives and knitting them together to communicate something. We know this in a good work of fiction, too. There's a reason why there are certain classic pieces of narrative or story that are fictions that stand the test of time. All right, here's one of my favorite. In fact, it is my favorite narrative story, fiction in this case, fiction story of all time outside the Bible. And it's Leo Tolstoy's Anna Karenina, Russian novelist. He tells the story of three couples. One couple, their lives end in absolute tragedy. The other couple stays together, but they're deeply unhappy. And the third couple meets, stays together, fights for love, and they live in love through difficulty all their lives. And actually, you will not get the punchline to the entire book until you read about the last 10 pages. And it's like 800 pages long. Tolstoy was a master novelist. He put his material together to get... I'm not going to give you the punchline, by the way. You have to read it. I guess if I did, it would ruin the book if you ever read it. And if you're going to read it, I highly recommend listening to it because he's Russian, and Russians have this nasty habit of giving people like 18 names that are very hard to pronounce. So having somebody read it to you is really helpful. Get it on Audible. It's interesting. But for the rest, most of you are like, I'm not going to do that. But here's the thing. Tolstoy... He's a master storyteller. He arranges his material. Well, the same can be true for true things. We can arrange material in such a way to communicate values and ideas. And Moses has done that with this book. In fact, by the way, the more you read books of the Bible that are narratives, and you got to think there's a lot of them, right? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Joshua, or Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 and 2 Samuel, Kings and Chronicles are quasi-narrative. And you keep going down the list. I mean, these are long stories. And they're written, though, they're true, but they're written carefully to teach something. The more you read them, the more you will get the essence of what the author is actually going for. So there's thoughtful narratives. And Genesis is a very thoughtful narrative. Now, because it's a thoughtful narrative, letter B, a key principle in understanding narratives, is this. Let me make a note to edit something there. What did the narrative mean to the author's original audience? What did the narrative mean to the author's original audience? If an interpreter is going to be able to answer that question as it relates to Genesis, that interpreter needs to attempt to think about what was happening when Moses wrote Genesis. And I think I'm going to stop right here because I only have about 2 minutes, and this is a good place to stop because next time we come together, we can think about what was happening when Moses wrote Genesis and how would that impact how the book was taught. All right.
What are the blanks? There's two blanks on the bottom of page 2.
Give me the sentence, because my pagination is not the same as yours.
Well, they are not, however, a list of brute facts. Thoughtful narratives are designed and arranged to communicate
ideas and values. Ideas and values. All right. Other questions that you have so far? Yeah.
Shouldn't have Noah been one of the major characters, do you think?
So the question was, shouldn't Noah be one of the major characters? I suppose you could argue that, but I think that the major thing is actually the flood itself and the destruction that it brings, but that's probably semantics, you know?
Because there is a lot written about him.
Yes, there is a lot written about Noah. Joe.
Just three things, if I can remember them all. When you talk about parables in the New Testament, people think they're stories that are not true. But I've told, especially my Lutheran friends, I say they are more true than real life. Because if they see them as a story that is made up, they don't get the value out of them. And the other thing is, you could have enhanced your story by saying you've got a speeding ticket coming to church.
That would have been really fast. So. You know, technically, this road out here is, I shouldn't say this with young people in the room, technically, this road is 55 miles an hour out here.
It's unposted.
It's unposted. So,
yeah.
I'm safe, all right?
So, the other thing I wanted to say was, just a suggestion to think about is Luke 16 basically says, if you don't believe Moses and the prophets, you won't believe someone who comes back from the dead, which Jesus did. So if people understand that from the beginning, they'll understand the importance of getting Genesis correct.
Thank you. In fact, I am going to add that in, because that would be good, especially as I teach pastors elsewhere.
This guy. I witnessed to a Jewish man, one of my customers, and I asked him if he believed in Genesis. He knew Hebrew and all this stuff, but I asked him if he believed, you know, the story in Genesis, and he basically said no. It's like a fiction story that was just, anyway, so it's what it presented was a difficult in sharing the gospel, because he didn't believe that part.
Yeah, it's hard to move forward. At all. Almost impossible. Good. All right. With that said, we'll be dismissed and get ready for our morning service. Hope to see you back next week as we continue to learn about this book of the Bible together.